Lord Narja's tent was larger and more luxuriously appointed than Pharaoh's. He sat on a throne of carved ebony and ivory, decorated in gold and even rarer and more precious silver, with representations of all the principal gods of Egypt. The sandy floor was covered with woolen rugs from Huria, woven in wonderful colours, including the bright green that signified the verdant fields that covered both banks of the Nile. Since his elevation to the stature of regent, Narja had adopted that green as the colour of his house. He believed that pleasing aromas encouraged the gods to draw nigh, and incense burned in the silver pot suspended on chains from the ridgepole of the tent. There were open glass vases filled with perfume on the low table in front of the throne. The regent had discarded his wig, and a slave held a cone of perfumed beeswax on his shaven pate. As the wax melted, it ran down his cheeks and neck, cooling and soothing him. The interior of the tent smelt like a garden. Even the ranks of courtiers, ambassadors, and supplicants who sat facing the throne had been induced to bathe and perfume their bodies before entering the presence of the regent. Likewise, Taita had followed the advice of the sergeant-at-arms. His hair was washed and combed into a silver cascade over his shoulders, and his linen was freshly laundered and bleached the purest white. At the entrance to the tent, he knelt to make obeisance to the throne. There was a hum of comment and speculation as he rose to his feet. The foreign ambassadors stared at him curiously, and he heard his name whispered. Even the warriors and priests nodded and leant close together as they told each other, "It is the Magus."
"Holy Taita, adept of the mazes.
Taita, the wounded eye of Horus."
Lord Narja looked up from the papyrus he was scanning and smiled down the length of the tent. He was truly a handsome man, with sculptured features and sensitive lips. His nose was straight and narrow, and his eyes were the colour of golden agate, lively and intelligent. His naked chest was devoid of fat, and his arms were lean and covered with hard muscle. Swiftly, Taita surveyed the ranks of men who now sat closest to the throne. In the short time since the death of Pharaoh Tamosa, there had been a redistribution of power and favour among the courtiers and nobles. Many familiar faces were missing, and many others had emerged from obscurity into the sunshine of the regent's goodwill. Not least of these was Asmor of the Pahat Guards.
"Come forward, Lord Taita."
Narja's voice was pleasant and low. Taita moved towards the throne, and the ranks of courtiers opened to let him pass. The regent smiled down at him.
"Know you that you stand high in our favour? You have discharged the duty that Pharaoh Tamosa placed upon you with distinction. You have given the Prince Nefamemnon invaluable instruction and training."
Taita was astonished by the warmth of this greeting, but he did not let it show.
"Now that the Prince has become Pharaoh's Seti, he will stand in even greater need of your guiding hand."
"May he live forever," Taita responded, and the gathering echoed his words, "May he live forever."
Lord Narja gestured. "Take your seat here in the shadow of my throne. Even I will have much need of your experience and wisdom when it comes to ordering the affairs of Pharaoh."
"The royal regent does me more honour than I deserve."
Taita turned a gentle face to Lord Narja. "It was prudent never to let your hidden enemy recognise your animosity." He took the seat that was offered him, but declined the silken cushion and sat on the woolen rug. His back was straight and his shoulders square. The business of the regency proceeded. They were dividing up the estate of General Kratas. As a declared traitor, everything Kratas owned was forfeit to the crown.
"From the traitor Kratas, unto the Temple of Harpy and the Priests of the Mysteries," Narja read from the papyrus. "All his lands and buildings on the east bank of the river, between Dendera and Abnub."
As Taita listened, he mourned his oldest friend, but he let no shadow of grief show on his face. During the long journey back from the desert, Hilto had related the manner of Kratos's death, then gone on to tell him, "All men,
Even the noble and the good walk softly in the presence of the new regent of Egypt. Menset is dead, he who was president of the Council of State. He died in his sleep, but there are some who say he had a little help to start him on the journey. Chinka is dead, executed for treason, though he no longer had the wits to cheat on his ancient wife. His estates are confiscated by the regency. 50 more have gone in company with the good Kratos to the underworld, and the council members are all Naja's dogs. Kratos had been Taita's last link with the golden days when Thanos, Lostris, and he had been young. Taita had loved him well. From the traitor Kratos unto the regent of Egypt, all the store of millet held in his name in the granaries of Athribis. Lord Naja read from the papyrus. That was 50 barge loads, Taita calculated, for Kratos had been a shrewd investor in the millet exchanges. Lord Naja had paid himself generously for the onerous work of assassination. These stores to be used for the common good. The expropriation was qualified, and Taita wondered expressionlessly who would determine the common good. The priests and the scribes were busily recording the division on their clay tablets. These would be stored in the archives of the temple. While Taita watched and listened, he kept his anger and his sorrow locked away in his heart. "We will move on now to another important royal matter," Lord Naja said, when Kratos's heirs had been deprived of all their inheritance, and he was richer by 3 lakhs of gold. "I come to the consideration of the well-being and status of the princesses royal, Eseret and Merikara. I have consulted earnestly with the members of the Council of State. All are agreed that for their own good, I should take both the Princess Eseret and the Princess Merikara in marriage. As my wives, they will come under my full protection. The goddess Isis is the patron of both the royal maidens. I have ordered the priestesses of the goddess to consult the auguries, and they have determined that these marriages are pleasing to the goddess. Therefore the ceremony will take place in the temple of Isis at Luxor on the day of the next full moon after the burial of Pharaoh Tamosa and the coronation of his heir, Prince Nefertiti." Taita remained unmoving, his face blank. But all around him there was a rustle and murmur at this pronouncement. The political considerations of such a double marriage were monumental. All of those present knew that Lord Naja was intent on making himself a member, through marriage, of the royal house of Tamosa, and thus the next in line of succession. Taita felt chilled to his bones, as though he had just heard the death sentence of Pharaoh Nefertiti cried aloud from the white tower in the centre of Thebes. There remained only 12 more days of the required 70 for the royal embalming of the dead pharaoh. Immediately after the interment of Tamosa in his tomb in the Valley of the Kings on the west bank of the Nile, the coronation of his successor and the weddings of his surviving daughters would take place. Then the cobra would strike again. Taita felt the certainty of it. He was roused from his preoccupation with the dangers that surrounded the prince by a general stir in the gathering around him, and he realized that without him hearing it, the regent had just declared the levee closed and was rising and retiring through the tent flap behind the throne. He rose with the others to leave the tent. Colonel Asmore stepped forward to stop him with a smile and a courteous bow. "Lord Naja, the regent of Egypt asks you not to leave. He invites you to a private audience." Asmore was now colonel of the regent's bodyguard, with the rank of best of 10,000. In a short time he had become a man of power and influence. There was no point in or possibility of refusing the summons, and Taita nodded, "I am the servant of Pharaoh and of his regent. May they both live 1,000 years. Asmor led him to the back of the tent, and held open the curtaining for him to pass through. Taita found himself in the open palm groves, and Asmor led him through the trees to where a smaller, single-roomed tent was pitched on its own. 12 guards were posted in a ring around this pavilion, for this was a place of secret council, which no person was permitted to approach without the regent's summons. At a command from Asmor, the guards stood aside, and Colonel ushered Taita into the shaded interior. Naja looked up from the bronze bowl in which he was washing his hands. "You're welcome, Magus," he smiled warmly, and waved to the pile of cushions in the centre of the rug-covered floor. While Taita seated himself, Naja nodded to Asmor, who went to take up a guard position at the tent opening, his sickle sword drawn. There were only the three of them in the tent, and their conversation would not be overheard. Naja had discarded his jewellery and insignia of office. He was affable and friendly as he came to take a seat on one of the cushions facing Taita. He indicated the tray of sweetmeats and sherbet in golden bowls that stood between them. "Please, refresh yourself." Taita's instinct was to decline, but he knew that to refuse the regent's hospitality would advertise his own hostility and alert Naja to his deadly opposition. As yet, Lord Naja had no reason to know that Taita was aware of his intentions towards the new pharaoh, or of Naja's crimes and his further ambitions. He inclined his head in thanks, and selected the golden bowl furthest from his hand. He waited for Naja to pick up the other bowl of sherbet. The regent took it, raised it, drank, and swallowed without hesitation. Taita lifted the bowl to his lips and sipped the cordial. He held it on his tongue. There were those who boasted of possessing poisons that were tasteless and undetectable, but Taita had studied all the corrosive elements, and even the tart fruit could not mask their flavours from him. The drink was uncontaminated, and he swallowed it with pleasure. "Thank you for your trust," said Naja gravely, and Taita knew that he referred to more than his acceptance of the refreshment. "I am the servant of the king, and therefore of his regent." "You are a person of inestimable value to the crown," Naja counted. "You have faithfully served 3 pharaohs, and all of them have relied on your advice without question." "You overestimate my worth, my lord regent. I am an old man and feeble." Naja smiled. "Old? Yes, you are old. I have heard it said that you're more than 200 years old. Taita inclined his head, neither confirming nor denying it. "But feeble? No. You are old and as monumental as a mountain. All men know that your wisdom is boundless. Even the secrets of eternal life are yours." The flattery was blatant and unashamed, and Taita searched behind it for the hidden reason and meaning. Naja was silent, watching him expectantly. What was he expecting to hear? Taita looked into his eyes and turned his mind to catch the other man's thoughts. They were as fleeting and evanescent as the darting shapes of cave bats against the darkling sky at sunset. He captured one thought entire, and suddenly understood what Naja wanted from him. The knowledge gave him power, and the way ahead opened before him like the gates of a captured city. "For 1,000 years, every king and every learned man has searched for the secret of eternal life," he said softly. "Perhaps one man alone has found it." Naja leant forward eagerly with his elbows on his knees. "My lord, your questions are too profound for an old man like me. 200 years is not life eternal." Taita spread his hands deprecatingly, but dropped his eyes, allowing Naja to read what he wanted to hear in that half-hearted denial. "Double crown of Egypt, and eternal life," he thought, and smiled inwardly, keeping his expression solemn. The regent's wants are few and simple. Narja straightened.
We will speak of these deep matters another time.
There was a triumphant light in his yellow eyes. And now there's something else I would ask of you.
It would be a way for you to prove that my good opinion of you is fully justified. You would find my gratitude without bounds.
He twists and turns like an eel, Taita thought. And I once believed him to be a dull clod of a soldier. He has been able to hide the light of his lantern from all of us.
Aloud, he said simply, "If it is within my power, I would deny Pharaoh's regent nothing." "You are an adept of the mazes of Amon-Ra," Narja said, with a finality that brooked no denial. Once more Taita glimpsed the shadowy depths of this man's ambition, not only the crown and eternal life. He wishes also to have the future revealed to him. Taita marvelled, but nodded humbly and replied, "My lord Narja, all my life I have studied the mysteries, and perhaps I have learned a little."
"All your very long life," Narja placed his own emphasis on the phrase,
"and you have learned a very great deal."
Taita bowed his head and remained silent. "Why did I ever dream that he would have me killed?" he asked himself. "He will protect me with his own life, for that is what he believes I hold in my hands. The key to his immortality."
"Taita, beloved of kings and gods, I wish you to work the mazes of Amon-Ra for me."
"My lord, I have never worked the mazes for anyone who was not a queen or a pharaoh, or one who was not destined to sit upon the throne of this very Egypt."
"It may well be that such a person asks you now," said Lord Narja, with deep significance in his tone.
"Great Horus has delivered him to me. I have him in my hands," Taita thought, and said, "I bow to the wishes of the Pharaoh's regent. Will you work the mazes for me this very day? I'm most anxious to know the wishes of the gods."
Narja's handsome features were alive with excitement and avarice.
"No man should enter the mazes lightly," Taita demurred. "There are great dangers, and not only for me, but also for the patron who requests the divination. It will take time to prepare for the journey into the future."
"How long?"
Narja's disappointment was evident.
Taita clasped his forehead in a pantomime of deep thought. "Let him sniff the bait for a while," he thought. "It'll make him more eager to swallow the hook." At last he looked up.
"On the first day of the festival of the Bull of Apis,"